From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Later in the program, water, water everywhere, at least on Insight today. We'll talk about the Conaway Ranch water rights deal in Yolo Candy, what's it all about, and how such a big and important deal seemingly came out of nowhere and needs quick action. Also, we'll wrap up our series on the forced and apparently expensive upgrade of Sacramento's sewage system. You'll hear what Valley farmers and Sacramento businesses have to say about it. But first, with all this rain, we're wondering how the reservoirs and rivers are doing. In a few minutes, we'll check in with the agency that runs the Folsom and Shasta dams. But first, to talk about the rain we've had and are going to get, here's a meteorologist from the National Weather Service in Sacramento. He's Eric Kurth. Eric, thanks for joining us on Insight today.
Thank you very much. Well, we had a pretty interesting system come through this weekend. It's kind of a combination of a Arctic low that dropped down from the Gulf of Alaska, providing some cool air and drawing in some strong Pacific moisture. And that combination gave us quite a bit of snow over the mountains. We had some amounts about 3 to 5 feet up at some of the ski resorts and the higher Sierra. And we had quite a bit of rain in the valley and the foothills, about 2 to 3 inches over much of the valley. And the foothills had amounts, some cases up to 5 to maybe even 10 inches in a few spots. So it brought quite a bit of water and quite a bit of snow to the area.
Is that a typical amount of rain and snow for this time of year in this part of the world?
No, it's really a pretty significant storm. It's not unprecedented, but really an impressive combination of snow and moisture across the area. So,
what's caused it? You said that this is more than average. What conditions have made this happen?
Well, I said we've had a very impressive plume of moisture that came across the Pacific, originating from west of Hawaii, and we call that an atmospheric river. And that just sort of fuels the storm by just supplying quite a bit of moisture, very moist air, and then combined with that cooler air, created a lot of snow and up in the mountains and a lot of rain in the valley. And that moisture stream has now shifted further southward, so that's affecting Southern California now.
Because they're getting a lot of rain today, I understand.
Yes, they certainly are. They're getting quite a bit, and certainly threats of mudslides, and I've heard some of the rivers down there have risen up quite a bit.
I've heard that there's a La Nina in the Pacific Ocean. Is that correct? And if so, is that part of the reason why we've had all this rain and snow?
There is a La Nina going on right now, and that's the cooler water off of the coast of South America. And that may be a factor with this. Sometimes with a La Nina pattern, it can tend to give sort of a wet period to the late fall and sort of early winter period.
Eric Kurth, meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Sacramento, telling us about the weather we've had and are getting today. We'll come back to him in a couple of minutes to talk about what's ahead, rain and snow-wise. But let's check in now with Pete Lucero, who's Public Affairs Officer for the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation's Mid-Pacific Region, which operates in this part of the United States and runs, among many other things, the Folsom and Shasta dams. Pete, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
Well, how does it look in those two big reservoirs, Folsom and Shasta? How are they doing with this rain that's been falling so far?
Well, right now, those two reservoirs are performing very well. We're at about 22% above normal for this time of year at Shasta, and about 18% above normal for Folsom for this time of year. So these inflows we've received from these this last storm and the one coming up has been good for water storage for our system.
I know that the American River has been higher than usual over the last week or so because the Bureau of Reclamation actually released some water from Folsom and I believe also from Shasta into the Sacramento River. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct, Jeffrey. We had to we're releasing water from Folsom and Shasta to meet our storage requirements, particularly at Folsom from the Sacramento Area Flood Control Agencies, the requirements that they have for flood protection. We're currently at about 20,000 cubic feet per second out of Folsom. That's down from 30,000 earlier in the week. So we're seeing a ramp down right now, anticipating what this next storm is going to do. And at Shasta, we are at 15,000 cubic feet per second releases, and we'll be seeing a ramp down to about 7,000 CFS by Monday next week. Now, those numbers could change depending upon how the storm comes in and reacts, either up or down, but that currently is our schedule for those two areas.
Did you increase the outflows from those two reservoirs because of the storms that we've just had and are about to get?
That's correct. We have to reserve flood space within those reservoirs. As you know, that the purpose of those reservoirs is for flood protection. So we need to be able to capture those inflows if they come in any significant amount to assure that downstream communities are protected from flood. So the purpose for those releases is to make room and space within the reservoir to accept those inflows.
How do you know how much is the right amount of water to let out before storms?
It's a very difficult computation, and it has to do with how the storms are being predicted to react. And we work very closely with the National Weather Service on what they think that the precipitation might do, how that's going to play out in the way of whether it'll be a warm rain, whether it'll be a cold, the snowpack. There's a lot of factors that go into it. We are also have a guideline that we live by as it relates to flood space during certain times of year in the reservoir, that we try to maintain that amount of space in order to accept those flows. So it's a kind of a difficult balance, but we do the best we can to maintain as much storage of water at the same time making the releases that we need in order to achieve that balance.
Eric Kurth at the National Weather Service. Pete just mentioned the next storm. What are we expecting rain and snow-wise in the storm that's heading our way in a day or so?
Well, the storm that we are going to be experiencing is currently moving onshore, and there's some rain along the coast, and we're getting some very light showers up in the Redding area right now, and we're expecting some of that light rain to spread over the area later today and tonight. The amounts in the valley are not really going to be that large, perhaps maybe a quarter to a half inch over the valley, maybe around an inch or so in the foothills. And a little bit more than that up in the mountains. Snow levels are going to be relatively low, about the 4,500-foot level over the northern Sierra. So we're expecting snow over that level, probably in the 5 to 10-inch range. So we're not expecting a lot of rain that would cause large increases in river levels with this system. A lot of the moisture and energy is diving further south into southern California, and that's where the biggest impact will be from heavy rain.
So we're expecting rain on more than one occasion this week, including on Christmas Day.
That's right. Yeah, this system, like I said, will be tonight and tomorrow and be winding down by tomorrow evening. The next system will be coming in, like you said, for Christmas Day, probably mainly in the afternoon and overnight. It's hard to say exactly how much we're going to be getting out of that. There's some disagreement with the models, but it does have some potential to be a relatively significant amount.
Pete Lucero at the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, have the storms up until now matched what your computers or whatever told you to expect?
They actually underperformed to what we expected, but the releases that we made were appropriate to the amount of rain that we received. So bottom line is, I believe, and Eric can correct me on this, I think that the weather we saw in this last storm was cooler than we expected, which means that the snowfall, or we got more snow than we in the lower elevations than we expected. We expected more rain, and that's why we didn't get as much inflow as we had anticipated.
Eric, is that right?
I think actually overall our forecast was quite good. There were some earlier projections. Some of the models were hinting at maybe some of the warmer air coming in, and that shifted southward. So I said maybe some early thoughts were that it might be higher snow level. But I think overall the forecast did well, especially in that short term.
Pete, I remember it was about 11 or 12 years ago when the winter started out very wet and a lot of water was released from Folsom Reservoir, from Folsom Lake. And then the rain just stopped and the level of the reservoir fell and was at a rather low level by the time you got into spring and summer. Has the Bureau of Reclamation learned anything from those experiences to try and prevent that happening again?
Well, Jeffrey, I'm not familiar with that event, but we do work very closely with all of our operations and the other agencies affected by, you know, what happens within our operations. And we try to be very close to what we think is going to be the best management criteria for the operations of those reservoirs. So I don't expect that that event like that would occur in the future. At least if it did, it would certainly be not by design.
Pete Lucero, Public Affairs Officer for the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation's Mid-Pacific Region. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
And Eric Kurth, if we can just wrap up with you, what's the longer-term forecast for this part of California this winter?
Well, looking at the outlook for January, February, March, Northern California is going to be kind of between an area where it's projected to be maybe above normal wetness further to the north over the Pacific Northwest and perhaps below normal in Southern California. So at this time, we're kind of projecting sort of equal chances that sort of normal level precipitation for that period from January through March. And sometimes with La Nina, sort of the typical La Nina, that's you'll tend to get the sort of the wetter earlier part of the winter, and maybe it goes to more of a normal level later on. Of course, that's just a general tendency, so there's no guarantees, and it's difficult projecting out that far. But at this point, tendencies would be towards the normal levels for January through March through the rest of the winter.
I see. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Eric Kurth, meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Sacramento.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. When we come back, we'll move on from rain and talk about water that's at the other end of the cycle, wastewater. Specifically, we'll wrap up our series on the controversy over Sacramento's sewage system. You'll hear what Valley farmers and Sacramento businesses have to say. You're listening to Inside from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. If you're interested in being an intern on our program, you'll find information at our radio station's website. Go to capradio.org. Look at the careers and jobs section. Later this morning on Talk of the Nation, the U.S. Justice Department last week sued BP and eight other companies for billions of dollars of damages in the Gulf of Mexico oil spill. When does an environmental accident become a crime? Also, the head of Barnes & Noble weighs in on the future of books and bookstores. That's Talk of the Nation starting at 11. Now on Insight, we wrap up our series on the controversy over Sacramento's sewage system. Water quality regulators ordered a big upgrade because it found Sacramento's wastewater needed more treatment before being sent back into the Sacramento River. But the Sacramento Regional County Sanitation District says that upgrade is more than is needed and would be unfairly expensive to ratepayers. They estimate about a $2 billion cost. Last week, we spoke with the Sanitation District's top engineer, and yesterday, a top official at the organization that ordered the upgrade, the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board. Today, you'll hear what some stakeholders have to say. On the phone is Matt Mayhood, who's president and CEO of the Sacramento Metro Chamber of Commerce. He wrote an opinion piece about this issue for the Sacramento Bee, criticizing the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board. And in our studio, Michael Boccadoro, who's president of the Sacramento office of the Dolphin Group, a public affairs firm. In this context, he's representing farmers in the San Joaquin Valley. Matt and Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You bet. My pleasure to be here.
Michael, what do the farmers in the San Joaquin Valley make of all this? Do they side with the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board requiring a big upgrade in the processing of Sacramento's wastewater?
Absolutely. The farmers have joined with some of the water agencies and federal and state regulators in calling for an increase in treatment of the sewage. Ammonia is a huge problem in the Delta, and water is the lifeblood of the state's economy. And if you're considering that and furthering that, the Delta's the heart, and you can't put pollution into the heart or poison directly into the heart of the Delta.
Why do the farmers in the San Joaquin Valley care about the quality of the water going into the Delta? Because ultimately that flows out into the ocean.
It's not just the quality of the water. That water is also, and the Delta is a conveyance system for drinking water to 25 million California residents and over 3 million acres of prime agricultural farmland. To the degree that the Delta is not healthy and being polluted, it impacts the ability to move water to the Central Valley farms, to move water to the Bay Area and Santa Clara, Alameda, Contra Costa, and it impacts not just the environment, but the economy of the entire state.
Do the farmers think the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board went far enough?
We think they went far enough. We think they've given Sac Regional probably a little bit too much time to come into compliance. 10 years is a long time, and the Delta is ailing. And reducing ammonia in the short term would be very important from our perspective.
You're saying the 10-year timeline from now until full implementation is too long.
That's correct.
Although Ken Landau yesterday in our program said that that's a pretty aggressive schedule, and he's not with the district. He's the part of the organization ordering the upgrade.
It is, and 10 years is a long time. It's the longest they can afford. It's a significant upgrade, so it can be reasonably looked at from that standpoint. But the ammonia issue is a short-term crisis issue. It's been 10 years in the works, and so really we're talking about a 20-year period of time that Sac Regional's been given to get their act together on ammonia.
Matt Mayhood, you and your organization have a different perspective on this.
Yeah, I have a little bit different perspective on it, and I also have concerns about Mr. Boccadoro's kind of approach and the position that he takes, depending on what organization he's representing of the day. But the Metro Chamber, we represent, 2,000 businesses in the Sacramento region. 80% of them are small businesses. And we're concerned that the Regional Water Quality Board is kind of overreached here. We, too, the Sacramento region, cares about the Delta, and we want to do our fair share. But we need to address the problems in the Delta in a comprehensive, integrated fashion without overburdening one region's economy over the other. And to simply go from one discharge permit to say you have to implement a $2 billion fix is going to raise the ratepayers' fees three times for the average ratepayer, and businesses five and six times. And that's going to just devastate our region's economy pretty quickly at a time when we have 12.8% unemployment. So we're willing to do our fair share. We're willing to address some of the ammonia discharges in the Sacramento wastewater. But I believe they've gone a little bit too far in their draft permit, saying the additional things we need to remove from the water.
Let's listen to a clip of Ken Landau of the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board speaking in our program yesterday when he said that the norm is that the polluter pays.
If you are using a public resource, the air, the water, you should pay so that somebody downstream or downwind doesn't have costs associated with the waste that you are discharging. This is set up as a north-south. I'd rather look at it as upstream, downstream. We see this all the time with dischargers.
Matt Mayhood, Ken Landau said that scientists that they went to who are not associated with any interested party in this matter affirmed their position that there's too much ammonia coming out of Sacramento going into the Delta. It needs to be cleaned up. Who else should be responsible for cleaning it up but the Sacramento region?
The The sanitation district has not denied the need to clean up at least half of the ammonia discharge, and they've said publicly they're willing to do that. But to additionally remove increased levels of pathogens and do the additional tertiary treatment is extremely expensive, and the science just has not demonstrated out the impact that that will have downstream. And we're having this discussion, but let's not forget that we need a comprehensive integrated solution. The problems in the Delta are also caused by non-native invasive species, Southern California's enormous water intake pumps where they kill fish, high salinity levels, agricultural runoff, and reduced flows. And all of these things need to be addressed without overburdening one region's economy over the other. And if the Delta is really a statewide regional, statewide asset, then we need to be looking at, who are the beneficiaries of the entire Delta ecosystem. Well, it's all of California. It's Northern California and Southern California, the farmers and the greater L.A. Basin who rely on that water source. So I think we all have a role to play in addressing the challenges of the Delta, and everybody should pay a fair share.
And Stan Dean of the Sacramento Regional County Sanitation District said something along the same lines when he was in Insight. So let's go to Michael Boccadoro, who's representing farmers in the San Joaquin Valley. These, Matt and others, are saying that other stakeholders need to do their part. What are farmers doing?
Farmers have been doing their part, whether it's agricultural drainage or the pumps. We're dependent on the pumps as well, and there's a huge process undergoing. I agree with Matt that a comprehensive solution is needed. We need to address all the stressors. This is one. We're stepping up as farmers in the Bay Delta conservation process, which could lead to a $12 billion or more upgrade to the conveyance system that moves water in the Delta to address the problem of the pumps that Matt raises. Farmers and Southern California water agencies and Bay Area water agencies are on the hook for that. We've accepted responsibility for our problems, and we're taking steps to address them. SAC needs to address its problems, step up, take responsibility, and deal with some of these issues.
Matt Mayhood?
Well, like I said, the SAC Regional Sanitation District has admitted that there's the need to reduce at least half the ammonia discharge, and we're willing to do our fair share. But to go beyond these additional steps of increasing the level of treatment, at this point, the science just hasn't said that based on the dilution rates in the Sacramento River, that we need to continue to upgrade and at this time go from the current treatment process to this, significantly upgraded permit that's really going to put new restrictions on Sacramento Regional Sanitation District. And if the state wants to get to this whole new level of treatment for the Sacramento region, I think that we're going to need some help trying to figure out how we pay for it without devastating our region's economy. Like I said, you can't just impact one region's economy to benefit another. And why stifle the growth of the Sacramento region so that the Southern California Valley and Southern California, their economies continue to grow, unbridled?
Matt, yesterday Ken Landau said that that this is about getting the Sacramento Regional District to catch up with what is the norm in wastewater processing, and he said that there's wastewater processing in the greater Sacramento region already operating in the way that the Central Valley Board is requiring the Sacramento Regional District to do. So I guess Ken Landau is saying that this is not about unfairly impacting Sacramento or expecting more of Sacramento. They're expecting Sacramento simply to catch up with the norm.
There are smaller plants that are operating at higher levels in tertiary treatments. But let's keep in mind that, 10, 15 years ago, Sacramento region had multiple wastewater agencies. They've all consolidated into one larger wastewater agency. And based on that size, now all of a sudden, because they're a large discharger, the focus has really been focused upon them. But let's look up and down the state. Let's look into Southern California and into the Bay Area, and what do they do, how do they treat their wastewater, and where do they discharge it? Many of them are discharging the same type of effluent into the open ocean waters based on dilution rates. So, let's make sure that we're comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges here.
Michael Boccadoro, How can people in the Sacramento area be confident that people to the south and businesses to the south and farmers to the south are doing their fair share?
The regional boards operate throughout the state, and they're imposing these same sorts of requirements. Matt's just missing the point here. Sac Regional's being asked to do what all the other major agencies in the Delta have already been asked to do, and that's get ammonia out of their water and move to tertiary treatment. It's been 28 years since Sac Regional was upgraded. It's long overdue. We're bringing them up to standards that are appropriate for the 21st century. And, you know, they've acted in a very irresponsible manner. They're fighting this rather than educating their customers about the need for this upgrade. They should have been recognizing that this was coming for a long period of time, taking appropriate steps to begin to address it. But let's hit the economic issue for one second, if I can. And, you know, it's this $2 billion cost that we keep hearing about. Well, the first thing Sac Regional needs to do is do an honest assessment of what this is going to cost. There are two independent analyses out there that suggest the costs are closer to $1 billion than $2 billion. We need to get a grip on that. And then Sac Regional really needs to take responsibility and seek aid from both the state and federal government. They've started that process and see where we are. But other regions have done this without any kind of a catastrophic or any significant impact to their economies.
Matt Mayhood, how confident are you that the $2 billion that we've heard about is close to what it will actually cost?
Well, we've heard from the sanitation district. They've done their economic analysis and the cost analysis through the engineering studies that they have. They're the ones who operate the plant. They're the ones who bring in their contractors, and they know their processes. So you have to take their cost estimates at face value based that, you know, they're telling you what they think it's going to cost. Others can come in and say it's going to cost less, but they're not the one who are currently operating Sac Regional's plant. So they're not, I don't think they have, they're operating with the same type of information. You know, we can always hope that, you know, in this down economy, that costs are going to come in below expectations, that you're going to be able to get a more bang for your buck given the current economy. But we have to take it on face value. And $2 billion, even if it's $1 billion, that's a significant amount of money to be passed on to local ratepayers and businesses in the Sacramento region.
Finally, Matt, it seems likely that the Sacramento Regional County Sanitation District will appeal this to the State Water Board. If the State Water Board sides with the Central Valley Board, it's basically one of its subsidiaries, the next option would be to sue, to take it to the courts. Do you appeal? Do you support an administrative appeal and, if necessary, a judicial appeal?
Right now, we're working with the sanitation district to look at all of our options, you know, on behalf of the business community. That's looking at legislation, to look at funding sources, to look at how we use reclaimed water, looking at state dollar sources, federal dollar sources, and then obviously legal appeals is the last resort. You know, we want to do our fair share and do what's right in the Sacramento region, but not if it's going to hurt our economy and benefit others downstream.
Well, thank you both so much. On the phone, Matt Mayhood of the Sacramento Metro Chamber of Commerce, and in our studio, Michael Boccadoro of the Dolphin Group, a public affairs firm in this context representing farmers in the San Joaquin Valley. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you.
And that wraps up our coverage of the controversy over Sacramento sewage system. When we come back, the Conaway Ranch water rights deal, what Yolo County governments, a big Southern California water agency, and Sacramento developer Angela Sikopoulos all hope to gain from it. You're listening to Inside from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. You can follow me on Twitter. You can follow our show on Facebook. You'll find links and much more at our website. It's capradio.org/insight. On tomorrow, a whole host of restaurant stories in the news, including pressure on McDonald's to stop giving out toys and on Hooters to stop serving kids. And speaking of restaurants, Club Pheasant, a West Sacramento institution, turned 75. It used to be a speakeasy and has hosted many celebrities over the years. It's also famous for its deep-fried ravioli. That and much more on Insight tomorrow on Capital Public Radio. In this distracted week before Christmas, two Yolo County City Councils are about to cast important votes on a big water rights deal that many people only recently heard about. It involves the water that comes with the Conaway Ranch. Parties to the deal include the cities of Davis and Woodland, Yolo County, a big Southern California water agency, and Sacramento developer Angelo Sikopoulos. It's a complicated and controversial issue. Joining us to explain what's going on is John Edwards, who's a reporter for the Davis Enterprise. He's covering the Conaway Ranch story. John, thanks for joining us.
Jeffrey, a pleasure.
How long has this water deal been building? It just seemed like it almost exploded in the news a few days ago.
That depends on who you ask. If you ask Yolo County supervisors, it's been going on for a long time. They have been trying to make a deal with Conaway for over two decades. If you ask the public, a week, maybe a couple of days. For the Clean Water Agencies, they were hit with a 250-page document, including all these contracts with Sikopoulos, about a week ago. And the city councils, as you mentioned, are voting on it tonight. The Yolo County Board of Supervisors reached an agreement with him, a separate agreement on Conaway. That was a 16-page contract. That was released on Thursday afternoon, and they voted last Friday, so less than 24 hours' notice.
Why has it all come to a head so quickly and at this time of year when a lot of people are on vacation or at least distracted?
That timeline is being driven by Sikopoulos, according to everyone involved. I haven't been able to reach Sikopoulos personally, but apparently he's been negotiating with the current owners of Conaway. And he has a December 31st deadline, according to his lawyers, to reach an agreement with them. Otherwise, he forfeits all of his deposits. And so he's got to make that deal. Otherwise, he loses a good chunk of money.
My guest is Jonathan Edwards, a reporter for the Davis Enterprise. He's covering the Conaway Ranch story. Tonight, both Davis and Woodland City Councils are voting on this big water rights deal. An important step in this process was the purchase of the Conaway Ranch by developer Angelo Sikopoulos just a couple of months ago.
Actually, he hasn't bought it yet. He's in the process of buying a controlling interest in the ranch, and that's the deal he has to make by December 31st. And to do that, he has to get all his ducks in a row in terms of financing. So he has to make the agreement with the cities, and he has to get the agreement with the county. That's the prevailing theory anyway, to show his investors, hey, I have this money and I can go ahead and purchase the ranch.
Where is the Conaway Ranch, and is it actually a working ranch?
It is, yeah. It's 17,300 acres, and it is located east of the cities of Woodland and Davis, right between the two of them, right on the edge and in the Yolo Bypass. So it is... Sikopoulos' new LLC, Tri-City Water and Farm, is very aptly named. It's right in the middle of a triangle of Sacramento, Woodland, and Davis.
And that's about as protected land as you can get in California. Why would Angelo Sikopoulos, who's famous and made a lot of money building homes in suburban areas, why is he buying farmland that has to stay farmland?
That's the, as one citizen put it last night in a Q&A, that's the 800-pound gorilla in the room. I don't know. I haven't been able to reach him. According to his lawyers, he wants to continue. He's a farmer, and he wants to continue farming it. That has been met with some wry smiles by a lot of folks.
Because I guess they are... paying attention to the water rights that comes with the ranch, because as is common in ranching, there are water rights associated with this land, and it's the water rights that the Yolo County government and the cities of Davis and Woodland that they are specifically voting on.
Yeah, Conaway has a senior water right which dates back to 1919, very precious, and that's the key here, is that it has about 50,000 acre feet each year. As a water right, and it trumps a lot of other water rights. And the cities want to tap into that to the tune of about 10,000 acre feet every summer to supplement another junior water right that is currently working through the state. However, the state can cut that water off in dry seasons.
So Davis and Woodland see this as a secure source of clean water for the future if and when they need it.
Exactly, and they will need it. The agency says that the two cities are one of the few that rely solely on groundwater, and that groundwater doesn't meet looming state requirements for wastewater treatment, wastewater discharges. Those kick into effect, I believe, in 2017, and they expect to have the project online in 2016.
And the Yolo County supervisors who voted in favor of this deal late last week, that was for the same reason, I suppose, for these water rights.
Their vote on Friday?
Yes.
They voted to cap the amount of water that Sacopolis can sell to 80,000 acre feet through the year 2033, and with a maximum of 13,500 acre feet per year. And just to give people an idea of what an acre foot is, the U.S. Forestry Service estimates that it provides, you know, 1 to 2 average households with enough water to get through a year. But
so the Yolo County supervisors, their interest in this matter was capping the water use. They were not in it for the same reason as Davis and Woodland, to secure water rights for their own jurisdiction.
Precisely.
Yes. These votes tonight in Davis and Woodland at the city councils, are these, as far as you can tell, and you can probably talk more specifically about Davis, the city of Davis, are these controversial matters in those cities? Does there seem to be more interest in this issue?
I was at that Q&A session last night, and there were about 35 people. It hasn't generated the uproar that I thought it would, given the name recognition of Angelo Sakopoulos. That may be, as you said, due to the upcoming holiday season. I mean, I'm focused on my Christmas list right now. You know, it's it's kind of hard to go into work and, you know, all of a sudden this hits you and you gotta take care of it. I think a lot of people, you know, might wake up after the new year and go, you know, what happened?
Yes, I mean, you referred to Angelo Sakopoulos' reputation, fairly or not. He's somewhat of a lightning rod, especially among environmental circles, because of all the home construction he's done in suburban areas in the Sacramento region. There's also a Southern California Water Agency involved in this deal. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's Metropolitan Water District, large Southern California water supplier, and Sakopoulos, under the deal with the county, can sell up to 80,000 acre feet of water to anyone through 2033. Now, that also includes the cities once their 10,000 acre feet right comes online in 2016. And that 13,500 number I mentioned earlier also includes that number. So once the cities, you know, right kicks in, that's 3,500 acre feet he can sell off to Metropolitan Water District or any other out-of-county water interest he chooses.
So just to recap, tonight both Davis and Woodland City Councils voting on this matter. You'll be covering the Davis City Council, I guess, but you can't be in two places at once.
I can't. 4 p.m. is when the Woodland-Davis Clean Water Agency meets. Woodland meets at 6 and Davis meets at 6:30. I'm going to try to be in as many places as I can. Be putting a lot of miles on the car.
Yes, no doubt. Jonathan Edwards, reporter for the Davis Enterprise. He's covering the Conaway Ryan story. Thanks so much for joining us to bring us up to date on this complicated matter.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for the invite.
You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. When we come back, Deborah Isle, singer and lyricist in the 80s band Romeo Void, back with new songs. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. If you've got an opinion to express on all these water matters we've been discussing today, you can email us, insight@capradio.org. Later today on Capital Public Radio News, Tahoe tourism officials are thrilled with all their fresh snow just in time for winter vacations. It's a great line from an 80s pop song, "I Might Like You Better If We Slept Together." The woman who wrote and sang that line was Deborah Isle of the new wave band Romeo Void. The song was Never Say Never. The band went on to have a bigger hit with "A Girl in Trouble Is a Temporary Thing." Well, Romeo Void split up in 85. Now Deborah is back with a new band and a new record. When she joined us on Insight in April, I asked if she'd stayed musically active in the years in between.
Very sporadically, really. I mean, I've gotten a few little bands together and I've, you know, done some shows and done a lot of benefits. I get called for benefits. And Peter Dunn, who I wrote these songs with, and I have been writing together for about 15 years, and he's been real reliable for playing benefits with me.
Yeah.
But I'll have to say that this is a big concerted effort this year to write an album worth of songs with him and get a really stellar band together and get out and play and try to put an album out. It's due by the end of June, Unsettled.
Let's listen to one of these new songs. This is One Saturday Night.
Thanks.
Deborah is such a haunting song, the music and the words. What is there a story behind it?
Well, yeah, there's usually a story behind my songs. I take a lot of my material from my life and sort of my viewpoint. Wherever you are, sometimes you look back and wonder, what if? You know, what could have happened? And somehow the chords that Peter gave me, usually he gives me a track with just some chord changes on it, really had that feeling to me of that nostalgia and yearning kind of. And yet, the instance I was thinking about, the person I was thinking about, I know I shouldn't be with them. That was, you know, a long time ago.
Yeah.
So,
my guest is Deborah Ayal. She's a singer and lyricist. She was founder of 80s new wave band Romeo Void, best known perhaps for the song Never Say Never. Oh, what the heck? Let's listen to a bit of Never Say Never. This is Romeo Void. Deborah, where did you get the idea for that line, I might like you better if we slept together? It's so provocative.
Well, I was having some conflicted feelings, as you can imagine, from the lyrics of the song, but I was really attracted to somebody. So it's kind of like being attracted to poison, you know? It's like, am I going to be more dangerous for them, or are they going to be more dangerous for me? And
did anything happen with that person?
No, and I didn't tell him for over 20 years.
He was the you in in that song.
I didn't, but I was going to have some surgery in the year 2000, and they take you in and warn you, you know, this could be it, you know, kind of thing, whenever you have surgery. And so I thought, before I went in, I'd better call him and tell him. He was surprised, but he was pleased, actually.
I sometimes see the song's title spelled NVR instead of NEVR, Never Say Never. Why is it sometimes spelled that way?
Because Frank Sienkiewicz, who designed the cover art for the EP, he was the bass player in the band, he did that on the album cover. And so usually I'm the one who writes it, NVR, say NVR. I like that. And it was pre-texting that, you know, we used just the
But it's texting consonants. Friendly.
Yes.
Deborah Ayal, she was a member of the band Romeo Void in the 80s. The band got attention for that song, but went on to have a bigger hit with another song called A Girl in Trouble is a Temporary Thing. You were on TV with a song.
Yeah, we got to go on American Bandstand, and
it
was hilarious. It was really good. We were on with New Edition, and which was fun. And they were such young boys then. They're like little babies, and I actually got to make Dick Clark laugh. And when he laughed, his whole body undulated. And I've watched it over and over on tape.
What did you say or do that made him laugh?
I just said, well, we made it to American Bandstand, because he was saying, well, what goes on from here? And I was like, hey, we made it here, you know. So.
It's such a poppy-sounding song compared to Never See Never, which was more typical of the music of the band.
True, but I had fallen in love, and I think by that time I might have even been married. And things, you know, kind of change. Your outlook changes on romance when you have one that's really working.
Deborah Ayal from the new wave band Romeo Void. She is back with new songs and a new band. What did you do in the years, other than occasionally playing music, in the years between the end of Romeo Void and today when you're back in the music biz?
I've been teaching a lot, actually. I started doing artist residencies in San Francisco at the American Indian Charter School, and I had a printmaking studio at the South of Market Cultural Center teaching printmaking. I've been out on the Navajo Nation for a couple of years teaching high school art. And I was there most recently before my husband got offered a job in Sacramento.
And that's how come you're in Sacramento.
Uh-huh. But I was happy to come back to Cali. Absolutely. And, you know, I miss my students and the people I knew in Arizona, the great Navajo people that I met and worked with, but I'm just a California girl at heart.
The sax player in your new band is Dakota Ayal.
That's right.
Who's
He's
Dakota?
My nephew.
Your nephew.
Yes, so he grew up playing sax. I wonder why. He grew up listening to Romeo Void, of course. My sister is, you know, my number one fan.
Let's listen to one more new song by Deborah Ayal. This is Stay Strong.
I got on a city bus to find a vacant seat. Dead cold eyes looked past me and I looked down at my feet. A woman slid down next to me. She smelled like fallen leaves. It's her this time, not me, I thought. Unwashed and on the street. There's gotta be a reason I can't finish what I start. There's gotta be a reason why I have this foolish heart.
Deborah Ayal, singer, lyricist. She was founder of 80s new wave band Romeo Void, a San Francisco band best known for the song Never See Never. Also had a hit with A Girl in Trouble is a Temporary Thing. She's got new songs, a new band, working on a new album. Deborah, thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm so pleased. Thank you.
And Deborah's album, which she was working on when we spoke with her in April, is now out. It's called Stay Strong. And that's Insight for today. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Today's associate producers, Lynn Weaver and Sosin Morar. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. The senior producer is Jen Picard. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you. McDonald's gets sued for serving toys in its Happy Meals in California. San Francisco supervisors vote to ban them in that city and county. And Hooters faces its own suit for serving minors. On the next Insight, we'll talk about these issues and the new food handler card with the California Restaurant Association. Plus, newly elected Sacramento supervisor Phil Cerna. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Join me for Insight.
Tomorrow morning at 10 on Capital Public Radio.